Well, good morning. Decided I wanted to thank spring this morning, so I wore pink.
Didn't help.
Trying. You know what? We can feel spring whether it is or not, okay? So we're going to feel spring this morning. I think it's wisely been stated that the most precious thing that a person can touch on this earth is that of the life of a child. The truth is that, you know, we can busy ourselves with a lot of different things, some of which hopefully are worthwhile and are both pleasing and honoring to the Lord and are a blessing to others. And yet the most significant thing we can do is to make a positive impact upon the life of a child, to reach out and to influence a child. Because it not only affects today, but it also affects the days and the generations to come. Because what we're doing is we're making an investment in the future. Now I think it was the realization of that perhaps caused that very ancient or that ancient and very wise and skillful father known as Solomon to pen the words that he did in the book of Proverbs. And so I invite you to take your Bibles again this morning and turn in them to Proverbs chapter 23. You will notice that the text on the notes are wrong. I transposed the numbers. So we're looking at Proverbs chapter 23 this morning. That was read for us just a few moments ago, but look at what it says again. Notice what this father is saying to his son. He says, "Listen to your fathers," or your father who begot you, "and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it, and also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begats a wise son, a wise child, will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways." Now what you very clearly see here is this daddy wanting his son's attention. "Listen to me, my son." And he's talking here, when he's talking to his son, he's talking to the young man. The young man who perhaps has a body of an adult, but who still has the emotions and experiences of a child, of whom we might say is a teenager. And those words, "my son," he says there, is a phrase of endearment to him, saying, "My child, my son, listen to me. Listen to what I have to say to you, and I want you to give me your heart. Give me your thoughts and your emotions, and may your eyes take delight in following my ways." Now I trust our daddies here have done that at some point with your children. That at some point in time, you have taken your sons and your daughters, and you have looked them in the eye, and you have told them that you loved them, and you cared about them, and you wanted them to understand some things in life. That there were some things in life that I want you to know before you go out on your own, before you start your family of your own, before you get married, before you become a parent. Let me share with you the guts of my life so that you may know these things that I have discovered. Now that really is what the book of Proverbs is all about. Solomon, I believe, realized that one of the most important and significant contributions that he could make in society and to the cause of Jehovah God upon this earth was to release into society a wise and a spiritually healthy son or child who knew what it was to do right, because it's right to do right even if we suffer for it. Now we're in this series of messages here on Sunday mornings on some timeless truths for family living. And this morning, I told you last week, we're going to be spending some time again in the book of Proverbs. As we talk about raising a wise boy or a wise son, a man of strong convictions. You know, my prayer has been this. My prayer is that God would give us men, godly men, gracious men of conviction and of integrity. And yet, however, the simple fact is that God doesn't give us men. He gives us little boys. He places into our laps and into our hands little boys. And he gives to the responsibility to parents to train and to raise their boys to become men of conviction, men of integrity. Equally true, he gives us little girls. And we'll be talking more about that next Sunday and next Sunday's message as we talk about you and your daughter. But this morning, I just want to talk about sons particularly and the training and the raising of sons. Now again, I realize whenever I talk about a subject like this, you know, I really narrow my audience. Because many of you here this morning don't have sons. Your sons are growing, and your grandparents, and or you've never married, or I don't think we have in this service any. We have one who's still at home under the roof of their parents. So we're narrowing it in, and yet the qualities that Solomon was concerned that his son possess are qualities that all of us need to have within our life. And so, regardless of where you are in your status of life, there is truth for you to receive and to understand as we talk about this aspect of life of constructing godly men, raising godly sons or sons that are wise. Now it's interesting when you read through the book of Proverbs. And I hope you're doing that. But as you read through the book of Proverbs, you will notice that this word son or sons is used frequently. In my particular translation of the Bible, it's used some 40 times in the book of Proverbs. Half of those times, it says, my son. So undoubtedly, there's a lot of truths in the book of Proverbs that relates to raising of wise and godly sons, of a son who will honor the Lord and who will be a man of conviction and integrity. And yet it doesn't just happen, because children left to their own will not be wise. Because the psalmist has said that the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go as soon as they go astray as soon as they be born. Children left to their own will not automatically become wise children. Children left to their own will go their own way and do their own thing. They need a dad and a mom who will help to train them to do what is right. Now Solomon in the book of Proverbs, as I see it, that there are at least some five basic qualities that he felt that his son needed to know, that he needed to know before he left home and was out on his own. Five qualities, five things that every son needs to learn. Now the first of those is the art of standing alone. He needed to learn how to stand alone. Now, there's no significance, by the way, in the order in which I'm giving them, okay? I'm just giving you these five traits, and the first of those is to stand alone. And our son needs to learn that, as do all of us need to learn. We all need to learn that art of being able to stand up for what is right, because it's right to do it, whether anybody else is doing it or not. And so we need to teach our children how to do that. Back in Proverbs chapter 1, and if you look back there in your Bibles, and you're going to be turning to several places, but go back to chapter 1 of Proverbs. If you go back there to chapter 1 and you look there in your Bibles at verse 10, you will notice that it says there, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, say, come with us, let us lie and wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause or without reason. Don't do it. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, and whole like those who go down into the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, verse 15, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Don't go along with them. Turn over to chapter 4 of Proverbs, and you'll notice again that the same thing. In verse 10 in chapter 4, he says, "Hear, my son, and accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many." Now, that's the way it generally is, you know. But it doesn't always mean that you're going to live to be 99 if you learn how to listen and follow instruction and stand alone. But generally speaking, when you listen, you will live longer. But jump on down to verse 14, and he says, "Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on." In other words, Solomon, do you see what he's saying? Solomon was saying, learn to stand alone for what is right. Even when everything and everybody else around you is encouraging you to do otherwise. For don't you consent, and don't walk in the way with them, and avoid it, and turn away from it. So essentially, what Solomon was saying was, my son, when you come in touch with temptation and to do what is morally wrong, and which every young man will inevitably come in contact with, you better know how to stand alone. Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back. No turning back. It was the 19th century poet, Ibsen, who made this statement. He said, "The strongest man on earth is the one who stands most alone." The strongest man on earth is the one who learns to stand alone. So as a parent, part of my responsibility as a parent is to teach my children the importance of doing just that, of standing for truth and right when they're surrounded by foolish error. Now, I don't know about you, but as I think about that, I have a question in mind. Did you have a question in mind? Have you thought of a question this morning as we've talked about that? Your question should be, how? How do I do that? How do I train my children or the next generation to be able to stand alone without being a generation of self-sufficient individuals who could care less about others, or without there being isolationists and just being and never getting involved with anybody else? But how do I train them to be individuals who are uncompromisingly committed to the Lord Jesus Christ and to His truth? Well, let me just quickly give you some ways that I think you should do that. Of course, the first one is by your example. It is by your example. For as with anything, we cannot teach our children something that is not already true in our own life. We cannot impart what we do not possess. So we have to make sure that we're willing to do it ourselves, that we are standing on the side of biblical truth, that we are not just going with the flow. For to be honest with you, many of our children are just reflecting what they see in our own lives. But other than that, I think we need to teach them what to look for in a good friend. You need to help your children to know the qualities of a good friend. Proverbs says that the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. And listen, the book of Proverbs is filled with the characteristics of what makes up a good friend. Do you know what they are? Have you done your homework? Have you looked and read the book of Proverbs of what makes a good friend? You ought to look through the book of Proverbs and do that particular study sometime. So very, very important that we do that. Another thing I think we ought to do is remind them of the consequences of not standing alone, of letting our sons see with their own eyes what are the consequences of not doing the right thing. As I said to you last week, the impressionable, naive teenager or young person learns by example, by seeing from real life experiences. When the scoffer is punished, the simple, the naive, the unlearned teenager is made wise. He learns by seeing examples. And then also we need to help him choose the right heroes. It says in Proverbs 13 that he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. For the truth is, our children, as with all of us, will in a large degree become much like those that we look up to, by those that we think. As a man thinks in his heart, or a woman thinks in their heart, or a young person thinks in their heart, so will they become. That's just a principle of God's word. And so I think we ought to fill our children's minds with heroes of the faith, of men and women who really know how to walk with God. And parents, I understand that in our new library, there are some excellent biographies of men and women of the faith that are written for your children, for your young person in your home. I would highly recommend to you that you stop by our new library and you spend some time there and check out some of those biographies and read them to your children. It would be excellent ways for them to know who are some great heroes of the faith. You know, a few years ago, I would have said at this point, you know, it really alarms me when I go into some of the bedrooms of some of our teenagers and I see the pictures, the posters. I see who they have posted on their walls. It tells me who they're thinking about. You want your child to think about good and godly things? Put heroes of the faith in their lives. Help them look up to people that are worthy of being looked up to. Many of our sports heroes, by the way, are not worthy of being looked up to. Or many of our music stars. Be careful with that whole realm of who they're looking up. And then I think also help your child to learn how to stand for the truth with the least amount of embarrassment. Help them know how to do that. How do I stand up for truth without being embarrassed any more than I have to be? So first of all, our children, our sons, need to learn how to the art of standing alone. But then they also need to learn how to be sensitive and open to instruction. That was another concern of Solomon's here, that his son be open to instruction, to correction, to be teachable. You look back at Proverbs chapter 3 and verses 1 and 2. Notice what he says there. In chapter 3 and verses 1 and 2, he says, "My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commandments," or commands. Remember again, I said last week, when you find that word commandments or commands in the Proverbs, it's not necessarily just talking about the Ten Commandments. It just means an authoritative teaching. He's saying, son, don't forget my authoritative teachings to you, because they're my reliable, dependable teachings, those sayings and teachings that I've given to you. You'll be open to them, and don't somehow think you've got it all figured out. For length of days and long life and peace, they will add to you. Or a little later there in chapter 3 and verses 11 and 12, notice what it says there. Notice what it says. It says, "My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his corrections. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects." How? "Just as a father, the son in whom he delights." Now, what he was saying here is, my son, listen to the Lord's counsel and directives. Be open to what he says. And as a parent, and especially as a father, that is your responsibility to train your son in how to be open and sensitive to the Lord. And I'll tell you what, you teach your sons to be open and sensitive to the Lord, they will rise up and they will bless you if they have developed a tender spirit and heart to the Lord. They will be a blessing to you in your older years. Now again, the same thing is told to us in chapter 4 of Proverbs. He says there, "Hear, my children, the instructions of a father, and give attention to no understanding, for I give you good teachings," or good doctrine. "Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, lest your heart retain my words, keep my commands and live." Get wisdom and get understanding. Now, listen, I could just continue to go through the book of Proverbs and show you the same things over and over and over again, such as in chapter 15 and verse 12, where it tells us, "He who disdains instructions despises his own soul, but he who heeds reproof gets understanding." Now, as a dad, as a father, as a parent, it is my responsibility to train my children to be sensitive to the Lord and to the dealings in his life. Now, I know some of you are sitting there and thinking, but you know, my children are growing and I've lost that opportunity. Well, you keep praying that the Lord will restore the years that the locust ate away. You keep praying for your children. But those of you who have little boys and girls in your home, it is your responsibility to teach them to be open and sensitive to the Lord. They will not just automatically be that. You need to teach your sons that it is not manly to be a stubborn know-it-all. You need to train them to know that they need the counsel and discipline of the Lord within their life. Now again, how do you do that? How do you train a child to be sensitive to the Lord? How do you do that? Well, again, of course, by your example. You can't expect them to be open and sensitive if you're not open and sensitive to the Lord. But you also need to teach them to respond to your own counsel. You need to impart an attitude of expectancy, that you really fully do expect them to follow through with the counsel that you are giving to them when they're wee little. Many of us have missed the boat right there. It's right there when they're little. We train our children not to listen. We train our children they do not have to obey us until our voice reaches a certain pitch, or until we use their first and middle name. Stephen Arbor, John Henry. Or we shout across the room 8 or 9 times, "Don't do that! Don't do that! Don't do that!" And then we never do anything about it. You know what you've trained your child to do? You have trained your child not to listen. You train them not to heed your voice. And when you've trained them not to listen to your voice, you're also training them not to listen to the Lord. Now you say, "Well, where do you get that, Pastor? Why are you saying that? If I'm saying my child doesn't listen to me, he will not listen to the Lord, or won't be as apt to listen to the Lord." You don't know what? There's a verse of scripture in Proverbs 23. As a young pastor and as a young father, I told you last week I was studying through the book of Proverbs, and I did a whole study on it. I wanted to learn what I need to do as a father. I came across this verse. It's a very interesting text. It's a verse that says, "Do not withhold discipline from your child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die." No, he won't die, but it'll only sound like he's dying. And by the way, I want you to understand, I'm not talking about beating your child wildly with a stick until he's black and blue. I'm not talking about abuse. I'm talking about calm, discipline, the use of, I know it's not popular in our culture, but the use of a stick to help your child know he better do what you say. And you need to get that done before he's five. You need to get done. You don't beat your, you don't, you know, by the time your child's 8 or 9, spanking should be very rare. And by the time they're 12, they should not happen. You spank a child at 12 and 13 and 14 and you've lost them. They will rebel. So this is something we do early. Something we do early in the years of their life. We train them. But it says here, you strike him with a rod and you will deliver his soul from what? Hell. Now, when I read that, I thought, that's not true. Spanking my child, disciplining my, that doesn't save him from hell. That's not what saves a child from going to hell. It's faith in Jesus Christ, a lack of faith in Jesus Christ. For by grace are we saved through faith, and that not of ourselves. It's a gift of God, not of works. It's the glorious gospel of Jesus that saves people from hell, right? Isn't that true? Isn't it the glorious gospel of Jesus, trusting and accepting him into their life and receiving his new life and experiencing Christ in your life? That's what saves you from hell. So what does this mean? What does it mean? And I remember sitting there in my office thinking, ah, Lord, if I teach my children to listen to me, and I teach them to heed my voice when they're wee little, you know what they're going to do when you start talking to them? They're going to listen to you. When you start convicting them and you start wooing them and you start wanting to draw them to you, they will be that much more apt to listen to you. Do you know why we have teenagers that aren't listening to the Lord today? You know why we have young men and women who are not listening to the Lord? Not always. Not a blanket statement, but many times it's because moms and dads didn't do their jobs when they were little. You see, I need to train and teach my child how to respond to my counsel, to be quick to it. But then I also need to spend sufficient time in counsel with them. I got to spend time with my children. I cannot impart something to my children if I'm not with them. If I'm not talking to them, if I'm not speaking truth to them. So the first area we need to teach our children in is train them the art of standing alone and what is right. And then to be open and sensitive to the instruction and correction of counsel. But number three, I think we also need to teach them how to deal with temptation. The book of Proverbs is full of that, by the way. It's interesting, you go through the book of Proverbs and Solomon, he had a whole lot to say about two particular areas of temptation that every teenage boy struggles with. He struggles with the area of sexual deviance or sexual temptations, should I say, as well as with the issues of intoxication and addictions, with the allurement of alcohol and drugs. Now, Solomon knew that every young man, every teenage boy will struggle with these things. He knew his son, in his culture, he knew that, and it's no different in our culture today, is it? Right? Our teenagers struggle with these issues. By the way, it's not only teenagers, there's a lot of old people that haven't figured it out either. And we need to figure out what Proverbs is talking about on these issues. Let's take the issue of sexual deviance or sexual temptation, whether that's to somebody of the opposite sex or to somebody of the own sex, their same sex today. It's such difficulties in our world today. And let's not kid ourselves. Our teenage children struggle with this. Let's not put our heads in the sand and think, well, just because I've taken them to Sunday school and church when they were little, and just because I've had them in youth group or I put them in a Christian school, somehow they then are not tempted in this realm. The reality is our children are tempted in the realm of the sexual deviance. That is a reality. We need to do our homework. I'm not going to stand up here and say I did a great job of this as a parent. Probably one of the areas where I was probably the weakest in is in this area, but I am so grateful that my children have weathered that area so far. And yet it's an area where Solomon spoke about it head on. He directed several thoughts to it, such as in the book of Proverbs in chapter 5. You look over to chapter 5 of Proverbs, and he says, "My son, pay attention to my wisdom, lend ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, and your lips will keep knowledge." And then he begins to talk about the whole area of moral failure and sexual immorality, saying, "For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil." Now, what he's doing here is he's personifying sexual temptation as a woman. He's not necessarily talking about a harlot here or an immoral woman here, but he's talking about this whole area of sexual temptation coming to his son. And he says in verse 4 that in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. And then he begins to outline all the consequences of what is a result of this. And it isn't just an unwanted pregnancy. He says, "Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life. Her ways are unstable. You do not know them. Therefore, hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near to the door of her house. Lest you give your honor to others." You ought to underline those. When you give in to sexual deviance, you give away your honor. Your honor to others, your years to the cruel one. "Lest aliens be filled or strangers be filled with your wealth." As I read that again this week, I thought so many marriages have fallen apart because of sexual immorality. And you know who wins? You know who wins in those parts? It's the attorneys. You give away your wealth to your attorneys because of that very thing. "And your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed." Yeah, Solomon, in essence, was saying, "Listen, my son, you need to understand there's a price tag to be paid when you give in to sexual immorality. And then you also need to know how to do battle with it." It's interesting, all through here, he's saying, in the end, it's like bitter as wormwood. Not in the beginning. Oh, at the beginning, it's so wonderful and alluring and exciting. But in the end, it's like bitter wormwood. It's an acid-tasting thing. It won't bring you the satisfaction you think it will bring. In the end, it results in that, he says. You will mourn at last. John Regeer, who is with Carrying the Heart Ministry and who was here a few years back, a friend of mine, has developed a series of outlines and charts. This is the one he gave on the consequences of sexual immorality. I don't know whether when people give in to sexual immorality, they reap all these consequences or not, but certainly I know a number of them are true. There are consequences. You think it's going to meet the deep need of your heart, but it will not. And that's what Solomon was trying to help his son understand. You give in to immorality, you give in to a sexual deviant affair, and it will not meet your need, whether that's just to pornography, or it's to another woman, or to another man. It does not meet the needs of the heart. And then he says, here's how you do battle. Oh, by the way, that's why Paul wrote in the New Testament. He said that this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality. Listen, God is not a prude. It's not that he doesn't want you to enjoy sex. You know what? God wants you to enjoy sex, and he wants you to enjoy more sex, and he wants you to enjoy it in the realm that he wants you to have it in. Because he knows that's where the fulfillment is found. It's not found outside. Now, if we were not in an audience that we had some younger children, I probably would talk a little more about this area. There is so much to talk about in this area. But so many of our children are growing up thinking this is what we do because everybody's doing it. I had a young man one time say to me, well, you know, you try on a new pair of shoes before you make the purchase. But listen, we're not dealing with an object like a pair of shoes. We're dealing with hearts. And when you give in, and our young people give themselves to one another before they're married, listen, there are consequences. It brings heartache to people. It brings lack of trust. They give away their honor. They lose their wealth. There is a host of things that happen there. We need to be careful. But he was also concerned that his son know how to battle it, and that was to avoid it. It's talked about, he talks about this in Proverbs 6 and verse 20 and 24. Write that down there in your notes as well. But he also talked about the whole topic and subject of intoxication and alcohol and addiction. He says, wine is a mocker. I could say the same thing as meth is a mocker. And so is heroin. It arouses brawling. It causes heartache and bruises and hurts, not only physically, but inwardly. And whoever is led astray is not wise. You know what he's saying? He's saying that person who's led astray by meth or heroin or strong drink is spiritually stupid. He does not have the mind of God. Spiritually stupid. He talks about that through and through. You turn over to Proverbs chapter 23. It's interesting what he says there in Proverbs 23. In Proverbs 23 and verse 19, I'm reading it out of the ESV version, but it says, listen to me, my children, be wise and have enough sense to follow the right path. Do not be a heavy drinker or stuff yourself with food. It will make you feel drowsy, and you will end up poor with only rags to wear. Pay attention to your father and don't neglect your mother when she grows old. Invest in the truth and wisdom, discipline and good sense, and don't part with them. He there again is saying there are consequences. He again says there are things you need to be aware of. You need to watch out for. There are things, this will bring about a painful produce, and that's really what he goes on to talk about there in verses 29 through 35. It will bring grief and sorrow. It brings regrets. How many people have I met who regret the years that they have allowed alcohol to control them? As the medication of choice to dull their pain, to quiet their hearts. It brings regret. It brings arguments and strifes and complaints and physical injuries, health issues, mental anguish, instability, insecurity. That's why he said in verse 19, be wise and have enough sense to follow the right path. Don't go down that path. Our sons and daughters need to hear instruction like that. They need to understand truths like that. Because our world is telling them it doesn't get any better than this. Come on and try it. A little won't hurt you. What is it going to hurt? And the thing is, if we have not laid a firm foundation for our sons and daughters and helped them find their needs met in Jesus, they will end up going to illicit sexual affairs. They will go to alcohol. They will go to drug. They will go to entertainment. They will go to food. They will turn somewhere else to try to meet the deep needs of their hearts of love and acceptance and value and worth. Those values are only found in Jesus. So dads, that's our responsibility. But then also fathers, we have the responsibility of teaching our children how to handle their finances and discipline of hard work. Those are the other two things that Solomon talks about here. I find all through Proverbs, again and again and again, he keeps talking about these very things. For instance, in Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 9, he says, honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruit of your increase. He says, son, you need to learn that a part of your financial budget is to give to the Lord's work and ministry. That comes first. He comes first in our life. Parents, are you training your children that very thing? Now, again, you can't teach something you don't do. But he says we're to do that. He says in chapter 6, go to the ant, you sluggard, and consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain or overseer or ruler provides her supplies in the summer and gathers food in the harvest. He's warning about the dangers of laziness. But he's also teaching his son the importance of looking ahead and making plans for the future. You plan with your finances. You plan what you're going to need in the future. The reason many people don't have what they need to pay their bills at the first of the month is because they spent it on some foolish thing before and didn't plan. That's what he's saying. He says, also in your business dealings, in the way you earn your money, be honest. Dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Make sure you're living honestly. You make your money honestly. Don't cheat to get a buck. Don't misrepresent and falsify your product. Don't fleece your customers. In chapter 15, in verse 27, he says, he who's greedy for gain troubles his own house. Oh, friend, when you are only living for what you can get, you trouble your own household. Many little boys and girls are missing out because they have a daddy and a mom who all they're thinking about is how they can get ahead financially. I've underlined that verse in my Bible. I did that years ago, and I thought, you know what? That's not what I want. I do not want to trouble my household. I don't want to cause difficulty for my little boys and girls. The rich rule over the poor. The borrower is servant to the lender, he says in Proverbs 22:7. Now, I don't think he's warning us and saying you should never borrow. Some of my brothers and sisters think that. I don't think so, but I think you need to understand something. I think you need to understand that when you borrow money, that does make you a servant to the borrower, to the lender. You are not free to do what you want to do until you have that paid back. As long as you still owe somebody something, you are a servant to them. That's what he's saying. He says, whoever shuts his ear, oh, this is a good, you know, you need to teach your children how to spend their money. He whoever shuts his ear to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be heard. Listen, if you, this is good for children, this is good for adults, this is good for us as a church. If we turn our backs to poor people who are crying out, if we do not listen and we do not care about them, there's something wrong with us. We need to have a heart for those who are needy. Now, does that mean I give in every time they ask me? No. Sometimes the most loving thing I can do for some people is say, no, we're not going to do that. Because you know why? Because they're misspending their funds already. It would be much better helpful if I sit down and help them. I wish I had more time to do that, by the way. I would love to do that with people. But we need to keep our ears open to them. It says, let him labor working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need, Ephesians tells us. That's why we earn money, so we can have something to give. Not just so we can spend on ourselves. He who loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich. If you just live for entertainment and spend your money on entertainment, you're going to end up being poor man. Not just poor financially, but you're going to end up being poor spiritually and emotionally, by the way, as well. If that's all you do is live and spend your money for what is pleasurable to you. Now, that leads us to the last point. He talks about this whole area of the discipline of hard work. He says, poor is he who works with a negligent hand. But the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a son who acts wisely, but he who sleeps in the harvest is a son who is shamefully. Those two verses are saying it pays off. And yet if your boy listens to all of his buddies, he's going to find out, he's going to hear that the ignorant work and the wise get by with doing nothing. And yet God says, you know what the happiest people are? They're the people who know how to work hard. We live in a culture today where that's not true. So many daddies haven't taught their sons and daughters how to work. You know, one of the things that we as dads, that's our responsibility, to help our children, our sons, know there's a value. I read somebody, you know, they said that I heard one man recently say, many of us are ready to go to bed over a hangnail. Many young people think that manual labor is the name of the Mexican president. Proverbs says, or he says, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing. But the soul of the diligent is made fat. You know what happens when you work hard? Now, some of us kind of work over hard, maybe too much. But when you work hard, you get full inside. You get fine pleasure in your work. There's pleasure in doing a good job. He talks about all the consequences, by the way. He talks about that a lazy man will have trouble all through his life. A lazy man will become even poorer, and a lazy man will suffer because he lacks of his necessities. But I always stop at Proverbs 24 when I think about this. I went to the field of the slothful, and by the way of the vineyard, and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns, and its surface was covered with needles, and its stone wall was broken down. And when I saw it, I considered it well, and I looked and I received instruction. What was the instruction that Solomon got when he looked at this, the lazy man's doings? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall your poverty come like a prowler and your need like an armed man. Just let me sleep a little longer. Let me have a little more rest. Let me enjoy my pleasure a little more. Then I'll work. No, no, no. It doesn't work. Well, as a father, I'm responsible to teach my child those five things. And beyond all of that is the responsibility of helping my child know that I love him. You know what? Your child's never too old for you to tell your children, I love you. Knowing I was speaking on this morning, you know what I did Friday morning? I sat down and I texted each of my boys. Not Asher, I sat down at dinner and did it with him. And I said, I want you to know I really, really love you guys. My sons have made me so proud. I have so much to be thankful for. And I let my sons know that. And by the way, you know, your boys need to know that. They need to know you love them. You need to look them in the eye and tell them I love them. I care for them. I found, you know, to tell them that whole thing, you know, I love you and I'm proud of you. I'm so glad you're my boy. I'm glad you're mine. That's what Solomon said his dad did. He said, I was my father's son. I knew it. Dad was proud of me. I was my father's son and tender and only the only one in the sight of my mom. Precious. Precious. I found this anonymous poem. There are little eyes upon you, and they are watching night and day. There are little ears that quickly take in every word you say. There are little hands all eager to do everything you do, and a little boy who's dreaming one day of being just like you. There are wide-eyed little fella who believes you're always right, and his ears are always open, and he watches day and night. You're setting an example every day in all you do for the little boy who's waiting to grow up to be just like now, above all else, you know what the greatest thing we can do for our children? And that's introduce them to Jesus. Not to a system of belief. Not to a mere religious experience. but to a living relationship with the living God. Helping them to understand that Christianity is not just churchianity, but Christianity is a loving, living, breathing relationship with Jesus. Letting them see that you relate to Him, that you talk with Him. Now, what does that mean, dads? That means we got to do our homework, right? We got to make sure we have that breathing, living relationship with Jesus. Do you? Do you have it? Is it a daily thing in your life? I pray that it is. Well, Lord, thank you this morning for the truth of your word. Take it now and use it in our hearts. Let us learn. Let us grow. Let us mature. Let us be dads and moms of faithfulness. Help us in our weakness. And may our little boys and girls grow up to love you and know you.